Welcome to Code Green, the Climate Smart Health Professional. In this series, we're talking curriculum. We'll be exploring the intersection of climate change and health through illustrative patient cases developed by climate health experts and sitting down with educators around the world to learn how they've enacted climate-focused curricular change. In this episode, we're going to discuss how to create a robust climate health program within a med school curriculum. To guide us, we're going to be talking with James Sullivan. He's a med student at Cleveland Clinic Lerner College of Medicine of Case Western Reserve University, and he's entering his final year of training in the fall. Throughout his training, James has been instrumental in creating educational materials, being an advocate, and implementing the inclusion of climate change connections into the Lerner med student curriculum. So welcome to the podcast, James. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Thanks, Jenny. It's really exciting to be here and get to talk with you about this.
So I actually had the pleasure of working with James for 2 years before he entered med school. But for the listeners out there who don't know you, James, can you just give us a little bit of your background? What's your personal climate health journey and what made you want to work on climate while you're in med school?
So my journey with climate actually started in undergrad as a continuation of some interest in the environment overall. It was an environmental studies major and environmental health. I grew up in Acton, Massachusetts, which is one of the Superfund sites related to Grace Chemical and some other sort of bad actors in the late 20th century that were the basis of the film A Civil Action and a childhood cancer outbreak in Woburn. And I sort of, because it was literally in my backyard and would find the fences that said, don't go here, have always been interested in how the environment can affect your health. And so I came to undergrad and was looking for what to do with my life and actually wanted nothing to do with medicine. I wanted to work in the environment. So I was an environmental chemistry major in undergrad. I worked on soil chemistry and sort of the flow of chemicals through the environment, like directly related to what was in my backyard growing up. And sort of found climate change. And as we all, everyone listening to this podcast, I'm sure can appreciate, was terrified by, you know, the existential crisis that it represents. And so from there on in, you know, undergrad, I began to, in addition to my environmental chemistry major, also do a variety of different, you know, advocacy stuff around sustainability and climate change. And then made my way into medicine for other reasons, actually. And worked with Jenny, like she said, for 2 years before coming to medical school in something totally unrelated to the environment. And so I hit the ground in medical school and really wanted to get back to environmental health. And so as I was sort of having these thoughts, I just had the good fortune of running into the two leaders of our climate change and health curricular working group who were just getting it started. And they presented to our class meeting, like my first or second month of medical school. And they said, anybody want to talk about climate change and its impact on health? Come and find me after this meeting. And so me and my other good friend in class came and talked to her, Dr. Alyssa Gordon, who's the medical director for sustainability at the Cleveland Clinic. And all of us just got off and running within just a few days after that.
Thanks so much for going through that. I really love hearing, you know, how everyone has a unique path to working in this space. And so often it has to do with where you grew up, kind of how you first learned about climate change. And that really kind of ignited the fire to work on this issue. That's really, I think, unique and wonderful that right when you arrived at Cleveland Clinic Lerner, you were exposed to these faculty members who were already interested in climate work and creating this curricular initiative. Can you talk through a little bit more how once you connected with these faculty members, you identified, you know, how the structure of your work together would go and that it would be a curriculum project and the type of role that you would have in this project?
Yeah, I really, right, just give all of the credit and initial vision for it to Dr. Gordon and then the dean of our school, Dr. Isaacson, who was sort of the other co-chair of the committee and initial founding motivation. He, Dr. Isaacson in particular, is very keen on sort of flexibility and quick moving things. And so the very first meeting, our goal wasn't even necessarily to have a whole vision, but it was just what is one thing that we could do to create something related to climate. And in the background, you know, Dr. Gordon and Dr. Isaacson has had sort of larger discussions on a, you know, vague dream of a curriculum. And we began to work on that sort of simultaneously. But the very first thing that we did was to literally just try to do something. And so they talked to us about getting some kind of, about sort of what in our initial couple months of medical school might be a good fit to try to change and add in a hook on climate change and health into one of our small group learning cases. And so we pretty quickly were able to change that. But then sort of simultaneously, we began to work on a broad curriculum itself in a more rigorous way. But it was sort of this nice, it sort of felt very real for me right off the bat in that first meeting, because it wasn't some esoteric, what are our goals, what are our, you know, learning objectives, et cetera, which is extremely important for like robust curricular design. And I've subsequently learned all of that, and we've done a lot, like all of that, and are continuing to work in that way. But there was also this like very nice ground force, grassroots, just let's change something immediately.
Thanks so much for going through that. And just to really paint the picture for listeners of what exactly this process that you're describing ended up becoming, from what I've read about the curricular design that y'all implemented at Learner, is that a key element is the integration piece. It was really integrated into the existing curriculum rather than being a completely separate entity that was then inserted. Am I understanding that correctly? And if so, can you talk about what that distinction really means and why you chose to do it this way?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, this was sort of the group's original rationale, was that we could spend an endless amount of time developing a robust and independent climate health curriculum, but that it would be impractical to get that into our already extremely busy medical school curriculum. When I give PowerPoint presentations on this, I always put up a picture of a suitcase that's, you know, exploding of clothes and a small child pushing on it. And that's really what it would feel like if we were to try to shove climate change in that way. And so we could build something that was like tight and, you know, it itself made a lot of sense and was very robust, but we would never be able to get the whole thing into our school. And so instead, what we did was we looked at the way that we already taught medicine in the first 2 years. We started in the pre-clerkship curriculum, and we were like, all right, so we have an organ block style curriculum at CCLCM. And we break it into first normal physiology and then abnormal physiology. And so we just sort of went through the different organ blocks and thought about what ways that, you know, what are the short, low-hanging fruit changes that we could make initially to help build an understanding of climate change in a somewhat comprehensive way. So we, you know, again, after we identified that first case that we wanted to change, we then went back and we made some broad overarching goals for the curriculum. We had five. We've recently sort of revamped it. Now there's more than five, but just for simplicity's sake, I'll talk about the five goals originally. But essentially, there were five overarching goals that everyone at CCLCM, that we all wanted students at CCLCM to understand about climate change and intersection with health by the end. And then those then fed into learning objectives. And we essentially looked at the map of our curriculum and where we could fit in those learning objectives into individual sessions. And so again, it wasn't a single session on climate change, but it was rather in the lecture on COPD. We talked about the intersection between heat, like ambient temperature, and COPD exacerbations and the importance of AC. And we got a faculty member who was, you know, passionate about doing that. And then, and so it was just, you know, there's some other groups at the school that are doing similar things for other non-traditional medical school topics. And they call it the one slide approach, where we ask faculty members to have one slide added, or we add one or two sentences to our cases that we do in the pre-clerkship years during our small group learning, problem-based or team-based learning. I know that it's different med schools have different names for it.
Gotcha. That does seem, you know, I'm picturing that suitcase you mentioned with someone trying to stuff a ton in there. And there are so many angles of the med school curriculum and so many things coming to mind of how climate can be integrated into it. And I think that's amazing that you all were able to incorporate everything from pieces of information in lecture slides to information within kind of case-based learning. So I want to touch on both of those. First, the lecture piece. You said that you were able to find, in your example about COPD, a faculty member who was passionate about climate and wanted to incorporate that information into their lecture. Can you talk about what advocacy was involved in that search for a faculty member, or how that process worked, and what kind of reception you did receive from the faculty that you reached out to?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, with this is probably the case for all medical school curricular innovation. I just only can speak to our experience with climate, but it medical school, you know, curriculum design with this sort of respect, when there's an outside group like our group trying to integrate something in, it's so decentralized, and you need to have individual champions for everything that you do. And so a challenge of our method, which you're kind of alluding to, is that rather than a dedicated group of experts sitting down and designing something and then finding the space for it in the curriculum and implementing it, instead the burden is, we want to do something on COPD, we want to do something on, you know, heart failure medications, we want to do something on psychiatric medications. We have to go and find an individual champion for every single thing. And so that can be hard. But I've had the incredible fortune of just running into some incredibly dedicated faculty members at the school. So the COPD the COPD lecturer is the actually course director of our pulmonology curriculum in year two. And we presented at sort of a internal medical school retreat, just like a brief 10-minute update on what we're doing. And he was like, hey, I would love to, he like came up to me afterwards and was like, I would love to work with you on this. This is like really important in the world of COPD. And then like sent me a bunch of papers. And I was like, yeah, let's figure out how to get this into your part of the curriculum. And then we had a couple meetings and we went from there. So that's an example of everything like really working out. Then there were times where we would explicitly solicit stuff from folks. So we were in going through the different organ blocks in the first year, and we hit the musculoskeletal block, and we really wanted to do something on sort of operating room sustainability. And we reached out to the course director, and she was an anatomist by training and was very interested in sustainability, but didn't necessarily have an immediate idea for how to integrate it. And so that required a little bit more like back and forth, and we brought in a third person to sort of find the right thing that fit. So it can be challenging, but overall the reception has been phenomenal among our faculty member. I was like a little bit apprehensive, especially in like first and second year of medical school when I was still a student in these folks' classes, and just emailing them and be like, hey, I know I just did your course, but can we talk about this? And everybody was so nice and so interested. And if they themselves didn't have any expertise, they encouraged us to bring in somebody with the expertise, and we were able to find something that worked.
That's really inspirational and encouraging to hear. And I also just want to highlight, you know, you mentioned that half of what you did was more of that active individual outreach via email, and half people came to you. But in that example you gave, it sounds like your team and you were still presenting about this project at that med student and faculty retreat that you mentioned. So there's different types of outreach that you all were able to engage in, and that those are both just great ways for our listeners, if anyone's interested in finding faculty allies or starting such an initiative, to find people who are interested in climate, you know, whether that's a presentation to a large group who might have interested members in the audience, or that individual outreach. So just congratulations on such success. That's really great to hear how on board everyone was at the school.
It truly felt like incredible fortune, and we had the backing of folks that were very integral to our school. And so it was this amazing team effort, and I take very little credit for it. It was all the group. And it was all the individuals at CCLCM that are involved in the medical school being dedicated and wanting to integrate something on climate, because they all understand just how important it is and how necessary it's going to be for the next generation of healthcare providers to understand the intersections of climate change and health to continue to provide good clinical care.
I want to circle back to, you mentioned earlier, integrating climate and health into case-based learning at Lerner. And while this podcast episode isn't one of our purely PBL-style case-based episodes, I was wondering if you could just give us a little mini example of what one of your modified cases looked like with climate impacts added, sort of like a before and after.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll go with the asthma one, because this, again, was the very first case that we did, and it was really sort of the most seamless. So there was it was the first exposure that any of us in medical school had to asthma. It was, you know, we break into groups of eight, and on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday of the week, you know, we have a facilitator in the room, but, you know, they're not supposed to engage, and it's all the student-centered learning where we read the case, we you know, design our own learning objectives for the pathophysiology and, you know, management and risk factors, et cetera, related to asthma. And so the case was, you know, the like very first line, right? It's a clinical vignette. So it's like Eddie, you know, Sturvident is a 29-year-old male who comes to the urgent care clinic on a hot day with difficulty breathing. And then they go on to sort of describe how he's been having these asthma exacerbations, but he doesn't know what it is. And then, you know, the students are supposed to pick up that it's, you know, related to asthma. And then he works as like a zookeeper. And so there's this risk factor thing about, you know, allergens in his environment, making his asthma worse and stuff. And so we looked at that and we looked at the learning objectives that were covered and they all said stuff like that, right? Like describe the pathophysiology of asthma, describe the, you know, basic management for asthma, describe the importance of, you know, someone's environment, on possibly contributing to their asthma disease activity. And so we looked at that and there's clear overlap for where climate change, they already use the word heat in it. And so we just have to, you know, connect that to, you know, obviously extreme heat events in the climate era. But then there's other things too, like the workplace exposure, there's longer pollen season. So if you have an outdoor job and you have seasonal allergies, that's going to get worse and it's going to make your asthma worse. And then there's a sort of a health literacy and understanding your disease, how you need to look at the air quality. And right, there's all sorts of clinical studies, not necessarily even related to climate, but just related to how if folks are have an understanding of the air quality and check air quality apps, that has the potential to help them control their disease. And then, of course, there's socioeconomic factors, because the intersectionality of climate change is something that we can't forget about ever. And so there's air conditioning access and urban heat islands and stuff that we could all talk about. And so then the question became, so, right, I just said, I gave you a one sentence clinical vignette and a couple learning objectives later. How do we sort of quickly integrate all of this into the case? And so how the case changed was we have Eddie Sturvident is a 29-year-old male who comes to the urgent care clinic on a hot August day with difficulty breathing. We added in two more sentences after that, three. He tells you that it's much easier to breathe now that he's in the air-conditioned medical office, but he has no air conditioning at home. Mr. Sturvident lives on the upper floor of a brick apartment building in Asiatown near Interstate 90. He notices how much warmer it's been at night this summer, saying, "My evening walks might as well be at noon. The heat is just unrelenting. It didn't used to be that way." And so then from there, there's sort of two learning objectives that come out of that paragraph, and that was all we did with the case. So one of the learning objectives is identify at least three environmental triggers of asthma that are linked to pollution or climate. And then two is identify what creates heat islands in cities and how these islands exacerbate health conditions among vulnerable populations, such as those with asthma or those with low socioeconomic status. So that's kind of the way the clinical case rolls, where you just, we looked at what the case was saying, what the possible overlap was, and then how do we add one to three sentences to encourage students to talk about one to two learning objectives. And then the students do the rest of the work.
Thanks so much for going through that. That's a great example of how with just one case and just one organ system, you can really touch on a lot of dimensions of the climate health nexus, from, you know, environmental justice to environmental impacts on the pollen season to heat, to built environment, everything in between. I'm curious, what has the reception been like from students who've done these updated types of cases or been in some lectures with these new climate and health slides?
Really good. And, you know, generally asking for more. You know, we have general course satisfaction data, which is positive about this stuff too. But anecdotally, it's pretty wild. We're trying to get new students to join our curriculum working group locally. And I met with a first year this fall after they'd done this case. And she was just like, yeah, like, I'm really excited that people are working on this, just because, like, there's some of it. Like, we just did this case on asthma, but, like, there's so much more that we need to touch on. There's so much more that we need to do. And I was like, wow, I love how this has become the standard in the curriculum. And now you're already looking to what comes next and being like, no, we need more. This still only scratches the surface, which is the design of it. And so it's been incredibly positive, and they genuinely don't realize that this wasn't here a few years ago, and so I think that's kind of the best the best example and the best evidence for its reception is that folks think that it's just always been that way. And that it sort of is this seamless curricular integration, which is our goal.
Yeah, no, that's incredible. You also did mention something about greening the OR earlier on. And I was curious, you know, a lot of climate and health curriculum in medical education focuses on the health impacts of climate change. But there's this whole other dimension of climate health work that is the impacts of healthcare and healthcare delivery on climate change and on sustainability. So can you talk a little bit about how you were able to incorporate that angle into the initiative at Lerner?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right that both sides of the coin are important. While the latest update, which is a little bit of a decrease in the estimate, but it's that, you know, healthcare contributes to 8%, 8.5% of greenhouse gas emissions. And so understanding sustainability from a healthcare standpoint and what we can do without compromising patient care is incredibly important as understanding the intersection between the climate crisis and an individual patient in a clinical exam room. And this gets back to our five curricular goals that I mentioned at a couple different points, but I haven't actually read out yet, but I'll do it here, where, again, we sat down in the room and we took a 10,000 foot view about what we wanted students to graduate from CCLCM with a general understanding of. And so the first goal for that is understanding the scientific drivers of climate change. Goal two is understanding the impact of climate change on ecosystems and downstream impacts on human health. Goal three is understand the impacts of climate change on human health. And goal four is understand the impacts of climate change on communities. And five is engage in climate health action. And so within that, you have to address healthcare sustainability in sort of goals one and two, because it's a two-way street. Again, like I said, and like everyone listening to this podcast, I'm sure is aware, there's a tremendous contribution that healthcare has to greenhouse gas emissions and other environmental problems in the United States. And around the world. And so we were immediately looking for ways to talk about sustainability. And we were bolstered too, because Dr. Gordon, who's the overall chair of our curriculum working group, her sort of original foray into the sustainability realm was from the OR sustainability standpoint. She's done life cycle analyses on, you know, various different things related to pathology and operating rooms, and is continuing to work and be a leader in that field. And so she also was big on this and wasn't going to let us forget about it. So obviously I'm describing a motivation and a clear goal and having some expertise around to achieve sort of the second part of addressing the two-way street between the impact of healthcare delivery on the environment. But I can give some examples of that too. So two nice ones that immediately pop to mind are, which I mentioned earlier during that musculoskeletal curriculum and greening the OR. I'll just read the learning objective that we put together. But it was a case where a guy tears his meniscus and then goes for an arthroscopic partial meniscectomy, which is what Jenny and I worked on at our research group for coming to medical school, which is also a nice piece of, I don't know if irony is the right word there, but regardless, in a PBL case, in a case-based small group learning environment, where somebody goes for an operation, we added some sentences where the patient themselves, we made the patient an environmental activist who cared a lot about it. So he was like, what's going to be the impact of, you know, he was asking questions like, do you recycle in the OR, and what's the impact on the environment of my surgery? And then we have the resident kind of stand there and be a little bit taken aback by the question, but then the attending then goes and describes some initiatives that are actually at the Cleveland Clinic.
And so the learning objective is to identify the impact of surgery and anesthetic gases on the environment and describe an initiative to reduce the environmental footprint of healthcare in an operating room setting.
Wow, that's such a fun way to go about that, with the patient being the advocate and the physician actually having an initiative at the ready to explain. And I feel like that's the goal for many healthcare systems. So thank you for walking through that. That sounds like a type of case that will really, you know, make that message stick in the minds of students who get to work through that.
Yeah. The other like sustainability piece that I wanted to briefly talk about too, because it's my favorite sustainability thing that we do in the curriculum, is in the third year during the clerkships, where Dr. Gordon runs with both the folks, so the third year curriculum at my med school is a little different, where it becomes an amalgamation of some students at Case who also elect into it. So it's much larger than just CCLCM, which is a smaller medical school. And so there's like 60 or 70 total clerkship students. And essentially you break into small groups, and Dr. Gordon puts up a hospital room, and she's like photoshopped some different things into it, and students sit there and think about how the things that are in this hospital room are affecting the environment. So the paper towels by the sink, the plastic bag that you put your belongings in when you are admitted to the hospital and then sit next to your bedside, the food, there's a food tray that you photoshopped in there with some like disposable packaging on the food, but also thinking about sort of where you source the food from, and things like that. So a lot of our curriculum, as is with the impacts on health directly of climate, is very sort of, we leave it up to the learner to take it in whatever direction they want. And it's always astounding how these small groups can just produce such like brilliant ideas for possible sustainability. And again, these are not people who have this as a passion, but when you say, take a look at this picture and come up with a, you know, different ways that we could reduce the impact of, you know, this hospitalization, and they come up with these genius ideas every time, some of which are happening and some of which should happen.
That's such an optimistic note to kind of start wrapping up on, you know, even if it's not your lifelong career, your passion, everybody can get energized about sustainability and health and have great ideas to bring to the table. And with that, I just really want to take it to your final takeaways and lessons learned that you would give to anyone wanting to create something similar at their medical school. You can touch on, as I mentioned, maybe key lessons learned or any challenges faced, things to look out for. You can take it in whatever direction you want.
I guess the first thing I want to say is that I know that none of what we're doing is particularly unique. Every time I turn around, I see someone else at a medical school somewhere else that has done something that's maybe a little similar, maybe a little different. And so that's awesome. And so nothing that I'm about to say is unique or particularly special. But the main takeaway that at least I had that I'm applying to other areas of my life too moving forward is to just follow the energy. You know, I wanted to get into environmental health in some way when I started medical school. And that's how I sort of, you know, now have worked incredibly hard over the last 4 years on climate change and health. And if I had really wanted to do something else in the environment, it would have been really hard. And same thing with this curriculum. If I really wanted to design a course or give an hour-long lecture, that would have never happened. And if I'd wanted to, and again, like that, the very first integration we did was just the low-hanging fruit of asthma. I had literally just finished the asthma, the palm block as an M1. And so that's what we did. And I think there's downsides to that, which I've alluded to. But I think there's tremendous upside, and it's what I would absolutely do again if I had to do the process over. Is just follow wherever you have faculty champions that are going to help you, and wherever you have a low-hanging opportunity to do something early on and get a success to help build momentum.
Follow the energy. I love that. And what a great note to end on. Thank you so much, James. This was such a fun conversation, and I definitely learned a lot. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jenny.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Code Green, the Climate Smart Health Professional. Thank you again to James Sullivan for talking with us about creating a model for integrating climate change into MedEd. If you want to learn more about ways that climate change and health intersect and find out more about ways you can get involved, check out Medical Students for a Sustainable Future and the Global Consortium on Climate and Health Education. If you'd like to read more about the integrated climate curriculum at Lerner, check out the published paper in Academic Medicine, Climate Change and Medical Education, an Integrative Model, first author James Sullivan. This is Jenny signing off. See you next time. This podcast is hosted by Jenny Silva and produced by Natasha Sood. This episode was sound edited by Liana Hagis. The podcast series could not have been possible without support from Medical Students for a Sustainable Future and the Climate Clinic podcast at the Global Consortium on Climate and Health Education. We want to acknowledge the indigenous lands that we're recording from. I'm recording from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, which sits on the traditional lands of the Lenape people. Lastly, we want to hear from you. Just send us an email at codegreenclimatepod@gmail.com or DM us on social media. Our Instagram is at CodeGreenClimatePod and our Twitter is CodeGreenPod. Finally, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review this show. Thanks again for tuning in to Code Green, the Climate Smart Health Professional. We'll see you next time.